Your dreams, ambitions, and priorities are what make you unique. With Associated Bank Private Wealth, we've got you. Our personalized approach to wealth planning puts your goals at the center of your plan. Visit associatedbank.com/privatewealth. Member FDIC.
We're on with Karen Levy, Senior Vice President and Private Banking Group Manager at Associated Bank. Karen, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
I'm going to start our conversation talking about wills. I saw a report from Vanguard that says by 2030, roughly $18 trillion in assets will have been passed down by the baby boom generation to their children and grandchildren. And they're calling this the Great Wealth Transfer. And it brings to mind what's going to happen to that money, how that process will play out. And there was a story I read recently about how fights are increasing over the money as this transfer of wealth takes place. And talk to us a little bit about first that transfer, that huge number of people that are transferring money. And then we can get into the wills part of this, the wills and trust part of this in the latter part of our conversation.
Yeah, like you said, we're kind of in that great wealth transfer now. So all the baby boomers, as they're aging out, retiring, and passing along, that wealth is being passed down to children, and skipping a generation, going down to the grandchildren. So we're seeing a lot of wealth movement, which gives my team a lot of activity for planning and structuring and helping with the tax efficiencies of inheritance. But like you mentioned, there's a lot of increased contention going on with when the will's presented and when the distributions go out with the beneficiaries. A lot of people, are objecting to it, saying that either mom or dad or grandma and grandpa didn't have mental capacity, or they don't agree with the terms of the will that was structured this way because I did more than my brother or I did more than my cousin. So we're seeing that that increased activity with everyone disputing what people have set in place for their wealth transfer.
You brought up a point there about capacity. Talk to us a little bit about that. How do you determine that also? And then how do you structure all of this where you don't have that question lingering?
Yeah. So as we age, we're all living longer, which is great, but we're seeing an increase in mental capacity being diminished, and we're seeing a lot of dementia. I think I read that by 2030, 78 million people are going to be affected with dementia or some type of mental decrease in capacity. So a lot of people are using that as an excuse to contest a will. So when you're structuring, you want to make sure you're doing everything right. It's not just you don't want to go online and use forms and do it yourself to save money. You want to make sure you're engaging an attorney, someone who's very familiar with estate planning, and really go through the process with them. You want to make sure the attorney is experienced. You want to make sure that you have testamentary capacity when you sign, which means you have the mental capacity that you understand what you're signing, you know what you're doing, so understanding the extent of your property, do I have a house, investments, bank account? You want to make sure you understand all that and who you're going to leave it to. Is it a spouse? Is it children? Is it close relatives if there's no children? And kind of understanding how everything is going to be transferred. So working with an attorney, they'll be able to, and they should be able to, if you're working with a good attorney, to really kind of assess the mental capacity and take additional steps of having a non-party that's involved in the estate be a witness to everything so that somebody can say, hey, I was there. I don't have any benefit from this. This is exactly what your grandma wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. And in some cases, that might include a medical professional, right, who's examined the person that's building the trust or making the trust or will?
Correct. Sometimes when it gets to a point, they'll bring in a psychologist or a psychiatrist to assess and make sure that the mental capacity is there. And that becomes more important, especially when this elder generation, if they're living in assisted living or different care facilities, you want to make sure that they really have they understand what's happening and they're not being coerced into doing something. Money makes people do bad things.
Yeah,
so you want to make sure that it's looked at carefully.
And in some of these cases, this is not just an excuse. It has happened before where some family member has tricked another person into redoing a will or a trust. I mean, this does happen. So we have cases of that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I see so much of it, more than I care to see in my line of work, that kids feel that they are entitled to this, that they did more. They, you know, Sister Susie got more than me, so I'm entitled to this. And you really want to make sure that it's structured properly. And if you make changes, because this shouldn't be set it and forget it. We should be looking at our will and our estate plan probably every 5 years at minimum, or if there's a life-changing event, to make changes. But you want to make sure you're documenting those changes so that there's a pattern. You can see that I've set and I'm giving everything to my three kids. Okay, my kids are adults now, but I have one that, you know, has a substance abuse problem. So I don't want to give them the whole lot of that. I want to structure it so maybe they get a little piece of it to, you know, suit their needs for personal care. Or I have a child with special needs that can't manage money. So you want to make sure you're looking at it and making changes and documenting that. Communication with your attorney and with your family is huge to let people know what the plan is, what the strategy is, and have that documented along the way.
In some of these cases, this could be really anxiety-inducing for somebody who's making the will or the trust. And talk to us a little bit more about that. I know some people might think it's expensive to have an attorney on retainer to deal with this, and a financial advisor, if you don't have a financial advisor, a wealth planner, or somebody like that in your corner. What should we be doing? Who should we be having in our corner on this? And when should that work begin?
I think it's not too early to start. Newly couples that are getting married, you can start to have a plan in place for the marital wealth that you're accumulating. Once we start having children, you want to make sure who's taking care of those children if something happens to both parents. And it just keeps evolving from there. You know, you want to be planning and making sure every step of the way that things are in order and everybody has what they need. So you definitely want your attorney. You want to keep communicating with your attorney, revisiting things, and a wealth planner just to kind of structure and look at things. And as we accumulate things, is a will just enough? Maybe now we need to look and have a revocable trust or an irrevocable trust for when we pass, just to make sure things flow nicely so you don't want to get hung up in probate. You don't want to get hung up based on the state with taxes if you're over the tax limit. So there's so much to think about. So you really want to have an attorney, estate planning attorney in your corner, a wealth planning team in your corner to help with investments and with structure and the hand down of the next for the next generation.
Karen, is this something that is all in one when you come to Associated Bank? When somebody talks to you about this and brings you in on this, is this something that Associated Bank would bring all together so that you don't have to go multiple different places?
We can absolutely work with clients and help with the investment part, help with the wealth planning part and structuring. You would need an attorney to actually create the documents. We can help with guidance and we can work with the attorneys, but we wouldn't document for our clients. We would refer them out to estate planning attorneys.
You know, as we look into the future, again, I mentioned that this is going to be about $18 trillion worth of assets that'll be passed down by 2030. We're talking about a whole nother generation of folks that you're going to have to be advising. I mean, this is not something that's just going to end with this passing, with the passing of somebody. You're going to see new clients moving forward, aren't you?
Correct. So as it passes down, that's the goal, to work with that next generation. And hopefully that next generation is involved before the parents or the grandparents pass, so that they're informed. They know what their parents and grandparents, what the intent was for this money and this structure. And then we work with them to carry that on and then create for their family and their needs.
And also help sort of navigate some of the pitfalls of having that transfer of money, whether it be taxes or something else.
Correct. We want to make sure we're doing things in the most tax-efficient way.
All right. Karen, I want to change topics here. I saw this story that jumped off, and it said that there are people in Generation Z who are looking to sports betting as a way to gain wealth and maybe perhaps build a retirement fund. Talk to us a little bit about how sports betting is sort of coming into view as one of those things. Is this happening?
Unfortunately, it is. This was the craziest thing I heard and did a little more investigating and research on it. And unfortunately, a lot of that generation is. These kids grew up with technology, so everything is at their fingertips, literally, in their phone. So they can go through and they can check their bank accounts. They can do their investments. And now that legally sports betting is out there and such a growing part of the sector, they're looking at this, which is, in my opinion, crazy because there's so much risk with that that they're not planning for the future. But I do see where they fall into this because they feel like they're behind the eight ball. The cost of living is expensive. Her house purchases are expensive. They feel like at their stage, they're not where their parents were. So they're looking for a quicker and more lucrative way of getting it fast. And, you know, it may work for some, but it's not guaranteed and it's super risky.
This report I saw said about 26% of Gen Z investors, these are investors born between 1997 and 2007, said that they're treating sports betting as a deliberate ongoing component of their financial planning. You mentioned that this is probably not a good idea. Can you expand a little bit on that? Like, what are some of the downfalls of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a blurred line that it can be. Am I investing or am I gambling? Because they're becoming so similar and it's such a cultural change that more people need to be aware of it. And, you know, you're tapping, you're selecting, you're wagering, you get immediate results, which, hey, I'm investing, I won, but it's really not investing. It's gambling and you're making that risk because it doesn't work like an investment strategy. We're planning, we're balancing, we have equities, we have fixed income. We're making sure that if one sector of the economy gets hit, the other sector is going to balance it out and kind of keep you even. And you're not looking at compounding interest. The capital doesn't compound when you're betting. And taxes can be a huge source of a downfall with that if you think you're succeeding with betting and, you know, making profits, but it's not sustainable.
If you're a younger investor, especially if you're, let's say, in your 20s and you start a 401k and you have, you know, putting $2,500 in there a year or even more than that, by the time you're 65 or even in your 50s, that's going to be quite a bit of money, isn't it?
It is. And then that's also, it's compounding. So you're not only earning on what you originally put in, you're making money as that increases, and then you're making money on that. So you've got that compounding effect that people don't really think about. And then the tax consequences too. I mean, gambling winnings are taxable, and depending on what state you're in and the jurisdiction, that could be a huge high tax. And with going into a 401k, you're going in pre-tax dollars. If you go into a Roth 401k, you're going in post-tax, but that money increases tax-free. So you got to look at the tax consequences when you're doing this too.
Do you think this is going to be an area where governments, whether they're state or federal governments, are going to have to get involved and maybe put a block on financial planning related investments or retirement account related investments or betting?
That's a good question. I think right now there's not a whole lot of regulation around the investing or the prediction markets and sports betting. So I would hope that at some point there'd be some guardrails put up around that. But, you know, to be determined. Like this, like I said, this technology and this generation and everything they can do is vastly different from, you know, what people, you know, my generation look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this. Stay tuned on this. We'll keep you posted. There's another story that I want to talk about. I know our interview is almost over, but we haven't mentioned artificial intelligence yet, but we're going to now. There's a report that AI is being used more and more in wealth management. How is artificial intelligence helping you do your job, Karen?
So it is coming in and it's helping us kind of do an analysis. It does a lot of the inputting for us, which is great, but you really need that human interaction to review it to make sure that the information is accurate, because that's what clients are going to want to know. It's great that we can go in and input this and the algorithm can spit out this recommendation, but can we trust it? And we trust that this is what we're going to need and this is how we should allocate going forward to meet the needs of the client. And that's going to be a huge thing, is earning that trust and making sure that it's reviewed and that everything is transparent, it's traceable, human activity verifying it. So there's a lot more to still go into it.
Yeah. So for the most part right now, it's just being used for productivity, doing things that, you know, bookkeeping related and data collecting, that sort of thing.
That's the main use of it now. They are working, and I know the bank as well is getting more systems that are able to do more of the analysis and kind of come with an output, but you really want to make sure that it's valid and it makes sense.
Is there a time coming where I'll be able to put into AI how much I have or where maybe I can invest my money to retire in a more comfortable way?
There is, but the information is, the output information is as good as the input information. So if you're just saying, I have this and I want to, you know, grow that tenfold, okay, great, it can give you an answer. But if you're saying, you know, now I need the input for college, now I need to, you know, plan a wedding for my daughter, now I need to look at retirement and I want to have X amount, there's a lot more that goes into it. And then the tax consequences, it's going to differ depending on what state you're in and what age you retire. So you really want to make sure that the information going in is accurate to get a decent return of information. So that's where I think the human interaction works, that we're asking these questions, we're understanding what clients want to do and where their journey is going to take them to make the proper decision so that they're ready to go when they want to retire.
Am I alone in feeling like artificial intelligence, using artificial intelligence for wealth management, is pretty close to using sports betting for wealth management? They kind of feel like they're both dangerous.
They're both dangerous, correct. You need to make sure you're looking at the bigger picture and not just finite periods in time, because our life is a journey and that's what you want your plan to be. Again, it's not, you know, set it and forget it, because things change. Divorce happens, death happens, illness happens. You know, the logarithm isn't really counting for that because you're not thinking to put that in.
Karen, great conversation. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
They can reach me directly at Associated Bank. My direct dial is area code 312-544-4604.
All right, Karen, thank you. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.